2 Samuel chapter 13, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. And it came to pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister, whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin. And Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very subtle man. And he said unto him, "Why art thou, being the king's son, lean from day to day? Wilt thou not tell me?" And Amnon said unto him, "I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." And Jonadab said unto him, "Lay thee down on thy bed and make thyself sick. And when thy father cometh to see thee, say unto him, I pray thee, let my sister Tamar come and give me meat and dress the meat in my sight, that I may see it and eat it at her hand." So Amnon lay down and made himself sick. And when the king was come to see him, Amnon said unto the king, "I pray thee, let Tamar my sister come and make me a couple of cakes in my sight, that I may eat at her hand." Then David sent home to Tamar, saying, "Go now to thy brother Amnon's house and dress him meat." So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was laid down, and she took flour and kneaded it and made cakes in his sight and did bake the cakes. And she took a pan and poured them out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, "Have out all men from me." And they went out every man from him. And Amnon said unto Tamar, "Bring the meat into the chamber, that I may eat of thine hand." And Tamar took the cakes which she had made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother. And when she had brought them unto him to eat, he took hold of her and said unto her, "Come lie with me, my sister." And she answered him, "Nay, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not thou this folly. And I, whither shall I cause my shame to go? And as for thee, thou shalt be as one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, speak unto the king, for he will not withhold me from thee." Howbeit, he would not hearken unto her voice, but being stronger than she, forced her and lay with her. Then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said unto her, "Arise, be gone." And she said unto him, "There is no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst unto me." But he would not hearken unto her. Then he called his servant that ministered unto him and said, "Put now this woman out from me, and bolt the door after her." And she had a garment of divers colors upon her, for with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled. Then his servant brought her out and bolted the door after her. And Tamar put ashes on her head and rent her garment of divers colors that was on her, and laid her hand on her head and went on crying. And Absalom, her brother, said unto her, "Hath Amnon thy brother been with thee? But now hold thy peace, my sister. He is thy brother. Regard not this thing." So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. But when King David heard of all these things, he was very wroth. And Absalom spake unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad. For Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. And it came to pass after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazor, which is beside Ephraim. And Absalom invited all the king's sons. And Absalom came to the king and said, "Behold, now thy servant hath sheep shearers. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant." And the king said to Absalom, "Nay, my son, let us not all go now, lest we be chargeable unto thee." And he pressed him, howbeit he would not go, but blessed him. Then said Absalom, "If not, I pray thee, let my brother Amnon go with us." And the king said unto him, "Why should he go with thee?" But Absalom pressed him that he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, "Mark you now when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say unto you, smite Amnon, then kill him. Fear not. Have not I commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant." And the servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and every man got him up upon his mule and fled. And it came to pass, while they were in the way, that tidings came to David, saying, "Absalom hath slain all the king's sons, and there is not one of them left." Then the king arose and tore his garments and lay on the earth, and all his servants stood by with their clothes rent. And Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, answered and said, "Let not my lord suppose that they have slain all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon only is dead. For by the appointment of Absalom, this hath been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. Now, therefore, let not my lord the king take the thing to his heart to think that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon only is dead." But Absalom fled. And the young man that kept the watch lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there came much people by the way of the hillside behind him. And Jonadab said unto the king, "Behold, the king's sons come, as thy servant said, so it is." And it came to pass, as soon as he had made an end of speaking, that behold, the king's sons came and lifted up their voice and wept. And the king also and all his servants wept very sore. But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur, and was there 3 years. And the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. Well, tough chapter. A lot of sin going on. There's plenty to go around in this chapter. Several things to identify for us here. So I have the first section as verses 1 through 20. And this comprises the first vignette all the way through when Amnon puts Tamar out of the house, and then she's received by her brother Absalom. So we have several things going on here. The first is that notice that that Amnon has an illicit desire. It seems to him to be upright, but he's fooled. He's wrong in thinking that. He thinks it's an upright desire. "I love her exceedingly," he says. It turns out he doesn't love her at all. He was more in love with the idea of having her than he was with loving her. And can I just say that this is, although this particular sin is played out over and over and over and over again in our society, and it's called the same thing that Amnon calls it here. It's called love. That it's not. And that there are so many things that we fix our desire upon that when we get them, we're often nonplussed because it was more romantic and exciting and wonderful to fantasize about the thing, to indulge ourselves in that sin, such that when we finally got the thing, it was not what we expected. This happens not only with people, it happens with things. When we set our desire upon objects, you know, young men, you might want to think about a car. And, "Oh, this car, that's the car I want. Oh, that car, oh man, that's that car. Wow." And then you get that car and it's like, not all it was cracked up to be. Right? There are many things that happen like that. Amnon had the audacity to call it love, and it wasn't. It was a violation of the seventh commandment. And remember that God's commandments are indeed the expression of love. That's what love is. Jesus says, "You love me, keep my commandments." That's what love is. Love is keeping the commandments of God. And so what Amnon had designed for his half-sister Tamar was indeed not love at all. And I hope you saw that when he finally got the object of his desire, then the hatred with which he hated her was more intense than the love with which he loved her. And so the true colors come out. And because Amnon was not pleased by the encounter, that Tamar herself rose up indeed to stop him, to speak reason to him, to speak righteousness to him, that simply became an indictment of him, so that now every time he looked upon her, he was rife with indictment rather than pleasure, and so he hated her because of her righteousness, that she endeavored to stop him from doing what he was about to do. This is indeed the same kind of hatred that we see between, or that Cain had toward Abel when he rose up and killed him in the field because his deeds were evil and his brother's righteous. We have the same kind of hatred here between Amnon and Tamar. All right, so then we have Absalom's consoling of her, and at this point in the narrative, Absalom is playing the part of a good brother, taking her in and caring for her. That won't last very long. Absalom is a willful man. But we notice that this is indeed a part of the judgment that was pronounced upon the house of David. This is indeed the sword that rose up within David's house, in his own house, for his sin with Bathsheba. And so we note that right after the sin with Bathsheba, his son goes forth and takes matters into his own hands as well. We have a terrible example that is indeed played out then in the second generation. All right, so then in verses 21 through 29, we have King David. He heard of these things, and he was very wroth. Can I say it this way? He may have been very wroth, but he wasn't wroth enough to do what he should have done about it as the king. Not only that, but a little bit later on, in fact, in the next chapter, we're going to see David wroth again, but not wroth enough, not angry enough, not moved enough to do what he should have done. But instead, he showed favoritism to his own household, not rising up and being the force of righteousness that the king is supposed to be in the land. Remember, God's minister for good. We remember the refrain from the book of Judges, right? In that day there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. We might modify that a little bit for this part of David's reign. In that day there was a king in Israel, but because the king did nothing, every man still did that which was right in his own eyes. We need enforcement. We need people to help us to stay on the right path. If there is no authority over us, if there is none to keep, to help us with our self-government, may I say it that way? To help us with our own self-government, we often will not govern ourselves at all. So Absalom and Amnon both show themselves to be men of little government, little self-government. Okay, so in verses 21 then through 29, we have Absalom's vengeance. Notice verse 23, and it came to pass after 2 full years. Well, there's a slow burn. There's a man who is not going to be turned aside no matter what. There's a man who's going to rise up in vengeance even after a long, long time. 2 full years. So as Amnon had devised a strategy, so now Absalom devises a strategy. And the strategy that Absalom devises is to wait until Amnon is merry with wine, catch him unawares, and kill him. And so that is exactly what happened here. Now notice also that all the king's sons at that point arose and every man got him up on his mule and fled. Now why do you think they did that? Well, they're thinking that they're next. They're thinking that Absalom is rising up here to get rid of all of the royal seed so that he might be the next king. As a matter of fact, they had it right with Absalom, although the occasion of it was wrong. We do know that that is what Absalom ultimately desired. And so they were right to get up on their mules and flee to get out of that dangerous situation. But what is most interesting about it, and this is maybe something that's a little bit subtle in the text, I think that the strategy was indeed for the messengers to go back and to rise up and to say, "Oh, Absalom has slain all the king's sons." And so what does David hear? All the king's sons are slain. They're all dead. And so he begins to mourn as if all of his sons were dead. And then a messenger comes and he says, "Oh, only Amnon is dead. Oh, I thought it was a tragedy." It still was a tragedy. But the strategy was to make him think it was something entirely worse and then to give him something that was much less so that there might be a mollification of any punishments that might come to Absalom. You think about that for a moment? I think that's exactly what was planned here. All the king's sons are dead? No, only Amnon. Oh, well, I should have taken care of him before. Now he's been taken care of. Okay, I'm glad that's done. When it's still an act of great wickedness on the part of Absalom. You see, many times the enemy of our souls advertises something much worse than it is and then sneaks in something surreptitiously so that it would be much less sinful sounding than it was. And so we find it more acceptable than we should. And that's exactly what took place here. At least in my opinion, that's what took place. So then, everyone returns except for Absalom, and Absalom, he flees from the king. Well, why would he flee from the king? Because he's a murderer. Notice that the men that Absalom conscripted to commit that murder, Absalom said to them, "I've told you to do it. It'll be okay. If anybody tells you, why did you do that?" You just say, "I was just following the command of the prince." Guess what? That's no excuse. That's no excuse at all. And so Absalom gave them slight comfort, and then he gave his father David deceptive comfort. And when he returned then, notice he didn't press it over much. He went aside to Geshur and stayed out there. And what does it say about David? That David's heart is still not right in this matter because he longs after his son Absalom every day. He should have longed after him that he might execute judgment and justice. Why is that? Because in the law of Moses it is written, when an innocent man's blood is shed, the land is polluted, the kingdom is dirtied, it is soiled, and it can only be made clean by the blood of him that shed it. David should have been longing for Absalom that he would be brought to justice, but he was not. David let his affections get in the way of his duty. Now, we have sympathy for David in that, don't we? Because we often do the same. And yet, let us remind ourselves that very often, while we are tempted to do so, we must never succumb to that temptation. We must continue one step in front of the other toward that which God has commanded, although sometimes it may be some of the hardest things that we've ever done. Right? All right. Thus ends the reading then of 2 Samuel chapter 13.